Radio Reverb. Brighton Festivals 2018. Now. All of the news, reviews, and what not to miss at Brighton Festival 2018 with Melita Dennett and Rebecca Sandals. On Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, the only station on air with a dedicated Brighton Festival hour.
You listen to Radio Reverb 97.2 FM on DAB and online at radioreverb.com. I'm Melita Dennett. This is Tuesday's Brighton Festival special. We're here Monday to Friday during the festival, 5 to 6pm, repeat at 10pm and 9am the next day.
And I'm Rebecca Sandals, and for the next 4 days we'll be looking behind the scenes at the Brighton Festival, meeting some of the performers, creators and people who make it happen. Today we're hearing about a unique performance which explores self-image through the lens of a classic work by Oscar Wilde.
Looking forward to a banger of a classical concert to wrap up the festival.
Finding out about a solo show which dives into the heart of darkness of Greek mythology.
Along with reviews and previews on the next hour here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. And Rebecca, it's feeling really sad that the festival is creeping towards an end. There's still a huge amount of stuff happening, so I shouldn't feel so sad, but it always feels a bit kind of like, oh, I hate it when May finishes. I hate it.
Melita, it is so not over yet.
It's not over yet. Actually.
I mean, you feel creeping to it, but that's a ridiculous thing to say. There's like 30% of stuff still to go. So, you know, calm yourself.
Actually, when you look at it that way, 30% of stuff still to go.
The
right.
thing you need to worry about is your energy levels to keep going. Keep going.
I'm still there.
So it is, though, your last call for the events that are running through May. So plan in your diary to get to catch them all before they do disappear. And one of them, which will end at the weekend, is Life Model 2. Festival director David Shrigley has transformed Fabrica into a classroom, but the traditional life drawing class is replaced by a caricatured sculpture of a 9-foot-tall woman. Visitors are invited to sit, observe and to draw using materials provided, and the resulting artworks are hung up as part of the exhibition and roll. When new ones come, they just disappear and different images come up. So I went along to Fabrica and found out a little bit more from the artist himself.
The life model herself is about 2.5 metres tall, which is, going on 8 feet in old money. So she's oddly proportioned, shall we say. She's got very small feet for such a tall person, and kind of unfeasibly long thighs. She's like a human grasshopper. Apart from that, she's pretty well proportioned. And if you took just a cursory glance at her, you might not notice until you started to draw. The reason for that is because I went to art school at Glasgow School of Art, and I wasn't very good at life drawing, even though you had to do life drawing. And I guess even if you do an objectively correct drawing of the life model, it'll still look incorrect. So maybe that's just a playful way of me acknowledging that I wasn't very good at life drawing. My contribution to the exhibition isn't, I don't make any of the drawings, because I made the life model. Like, she is my child, as it were.
Painful birth, that would have been.
Metaphorically, it was a painful birth, yes.
She blinks, I notice.
She does blink, yeah. She's a robot, technically, but her only movement is her eyelids. Yeah, it's a very sophisticated piece of technology. It's randomised, so she blinks in a random fashion.
So let's come back to the experience of the visitor here. So they walk into Fabrica, sort of a sense of the church still here in the building, and then what are you hoping to do? The setup we have is the life model in the centre and then easels all around.
Well, the intention is, and the expectation is, that most people who come to the exhibition will make a drawing and they all get exhibited, so they all become part of the exhibition. So I guess the dividing line between the artist and the viewer is blurred a little bit. It's a collaboration. And also the activity that's going on while the exhibition is on, people are physically drawing, so that process becomes part of the exhibition as well. So I think that open-ended nature of what is the role of the artist and the viewer is what I'm interested in, perhaps.
That's Brighton Festival 2018's director David Shrigley there talking about his piece Life Model 2. And Life Model 2 is free and it runs at Fabrica until Bank Holiday Monday. And it opens at 12 till 5 on weekdays, Saturday and Sunday 12 till 7. And on the last day, the Monday 28th, it's open 2 till 5pm.
Last call for so many festival things. I have actually been into it a couple of times and I keep thinking, I must go back and spend some time and actually do some terrible artwork following in your footsteps, really, because you did some shockingly bad artwork there, didn't you?
Some people might judge that as worth several thousand pounds, my artwork. I can't think of anyone offhand.
No.
But I would also like to see your work and then I can give it an honest critique as well. Anyway, Shrigley's Life Model at Fabrica. And also Shut down at
Onca, yes. So we had Bruce from the Mental Health Matters programme yesterday talking to Charlotte Vincent. We had Charlotte Vincent in on the show live a couple of weeks ago with Ebb and Flows, that 16-year-old rapper. So Shut Down, the multi-screen dance performance on video at Onca Gallery. Again, it's free and it's really worth looking at. And I popped in there a couple of times, so I've dipped in. But it's an hour-long piece, so I must actually not dip in this time. I must actually go and see it and sit down for an hour and just, like, you know, clear the decks of everything, go and see it properly before it finishes on Sunday.
But it is also one you can go in, get a taster of it, go downstairs. There's some oral poetry rap pieces by local artists, I think, that are being performed, that are recorded downstairs that you can listen to. So, you know, it's not one you don't have to stay for a whole hour. Something you definitely don't have to stay for a whole hour for is Pivot, and that's up and down on the seesaws on the seafront.
I loved your piece when you went down to Pivot and you tried to have a conversation with it. I had exactly the same sort of thing. It wanted to talk to me about the meaning of life, which I didn't really want to talk about, but obviously it was fixated on one idea of what is the meaning of life. So these are talking seesaws on the seafront. So go down, see if you have better luck than we did having a conversation with a seesaw. These are all free as well. So
it's the future, AI talking to things that aren't human, and that runs until Sunday, I believe. So
it does. So tonight at the Dome, A Change Is Gonna Come is Music for Human Rights, featuring Carlene Anderson, jazz performers Nikki Yeo and Nubia Garcia, and rapper Speech to Bell. It's gonna be a bit of a night, actually, this one. It's a bit of a hot ticket. So let's hear a little bit about what Carlene Anderson has to say about the show.
My name is Carlene Anderson, and A Change Is Gonna Come is about protest songs, from traditional songs to current songs, how it is that they can help people who want to come together and make a difference in the political climate that we have now and the climate that it was before, and how it can be improved upon. The role that I'm playing is as vocalist, music arranger, and song composer. We have Nikki Yeo, award-winning jazz pianist. We have Speech to Bell, award-winning spoken word artist. We have a young and rising star jazz saxophonist, Nubia Garcia. We have Renelle Shaw on bass, and Rod Youngs on drums.
Drove them from their door, and they
We have a wide variety of traditional songs in this show, and some new songs. Some are revised, some are as they are. One of them is Gil Scott-Heron's The Revolution Will Not Be Televised. One is Woody Guthrie's Ain't Got No Home. And one is Sam Cooke's A Change Is Gonna Come, amongst many others.
And always he was poor. His crops they lay.
the rather lovely voice of Carlene Anderson there with Begin Again. And before that, we heard her talking about A Change Is Gonna Come. That's a show tonight at the Brighton Dome, tonight being Tuesday night. A Change Is Gonna Come, Music for Human Rights. And that actually sounds like a cracking evening.
It's gonna be a goodie.
Yeah. So don't miss it. I think there are tickets available, so you could probably get down, if you can get down to the Dome for, let me just check, 7:30, £10 ticket.
Nab yourself a standby. Come on, if you're twiddling your thumbs, you're thinking, what am I going to do tonight? The answer is, you're going to go to Brighton Dome and see Carlene Anderson. Is the revolution going to be televised?
No, you have to get down to the Dome to watch it.
The Brighton Festival 2018. Radio Reverb. The only station on air with a dedicated Brighton Festival Hour.
And British/German arts collective Gob Squad, I love their pun, have performed all over the world for 25 years. The UK premiere of Creation, in brackets, Picture for Dorian, is inspired by Oscar Wilde's Dorian Gray, the guy who remains eternally youthful, but with a decaying portrait tucked away in the attic. I've got one of those as well. Everywhere they perform, Gob Squad bring in local people as part of the show, working with three younger and older performers, this time from Brighton and Hove. I went to meet them earlier as they were setting up at the Attenborough Centre in preparation for the show.
Okay, so look into the camera and show us your selfie face.
So, my selfie face?
Yes. What are you trying to convey with that face?
Cuteness.
Do you think you're succeeding?
Yes.
My name is Bastian and I'm part of Gob Squad, which is a collective of seven artists, English and German, and we're doing a performance called Creation, Pictures for Dorian.
My name is Berit. I'm also part of the collective Gob Squad, and in Creation I'm playing myself, actually.
Many people will be familiar, even if they haven't read the story, of A Picture of Dorian Gray, of a young man who leads a decadent lifestyle, meanwhile in the attic he has a portrait which is decaying and showing his kind of inner rot, as it were. This is the reference point for your piece. So tell me how you're examining concepts around beauty, aging, maybe even rot.
We had the idea to not only work on this topic on ourselves. We invited six guests from Brighton, three from a generation younger than us and three from a generation older than us, all having had a life on stage or wanting to have a life on stage. So we're putting all of the topics from the novel more to our lives and in relation to a generation older and younger, and how do we deal with aging, and how where do we look at, where do we think we are, and where do we actually are. And all of these topics are coming into a kind of a narrative of how to create something. We're more identifying with the artist in the book and not so much with the Dorian, maybe. So we're identifying with someone who tries to create something which they like or which they watch decaying. And then later they will go and the art itself will survive. All of these topics were interesting to us.
We do live in an age obsessed with youth and beauty, so it's very topical. Obviously, in Oscar Wilde's day, they lived in an age obsessed with youth and beauty. So how do you explore the topicality of today's anxieties around ageing?
Well, in various ways. It's this pool of performers and they all have or want a life in the limelight. Basically, we live off being looked at. This is kind of our capital, and our body is our capital that we are here with. And of course, these days you can do a lot to kind of try and extend your life by trying to shape your body, trying to maybe control it as much as you can by shaping workouts, dieting, whatever concepts there is, plastic surgery if you want to. Maybe the body is actually the only capital these days which is still sort of in our control, or is it? And that's the kind of question we try to explore with these kind of older generation and the generation below us. And also, of course, the whole obsession of that we are so concerned about constructing a self-image the whole time and how to present that. And everybody kind of knows kind of like how to take a picture of yourself, how to come across and how to sell that, so to say, and the value of that. And this is all kind of points that we try to draw on or play with in a very kind of playful way, I would say, as well.
Because I was wondering about that, because I've looked at other Gobscod work, and your work is very, very funny and very subversively humorous. Where does the humour appear in this, without giving too much away?
Well, the humour often comes through us trying to fulfil a task. And the bracket sentence, pictures for Dorian, is quite important because, of course, we are middle-aged, which Dorian never was. I mean, physically, he always looked very young, and he always was seen as young and beautiful, and he had all the success because he was young. He could do all the naughty things because he was young and beautiful, and we're not anymore. So
I don't know.
Well, that's how it feels. So the show is about making a picture for Dorian from the middle-aged perspective, with all the struggle, but with all the fun you have and all the excitement about you're in the middle of it. But where are we actually? We're know it all. No, we don't. And we want to stay here. Can we? Do we still have it? All of these things. And I think the whole show is a big picture from a middle-aged generation looking on stage life and presenting yourself, looking at your body and what you have achieved and stuff like that.
I guess the humor, I hope, also comes in the aspect that we are kind of like treating our guests as if they were material to work with, like art objects, so to say. That's quite brutal to a certain extent, but I think there is something kind of hopefully funny in that as well, that of course we are sort of overwhelmed with this material because they are humans and they're actually stars kind of by themselves, but we kind of try and shape this material as much as we can and keep control over it and turn these kind of beautiful objects into artworks on stage. To a certain extent, this is also failing, and there's improvisation in there. And yeah, there is the attempt that we try and kind of turn all this into beautiful images, and to a certain extent, we don't succeed.
What would you like an audience to take away from seeing creation?
What I took away from it was an unusual situation of three generations trying to create art together. And there's one scene in it which I really like, is where you have a mirrored box where one of us is sitting in, and we have an older person on one side and a younger person on the other side. And there's a three-way conversation where you really try to tackle the topics of life, but together. And it's not a family, which is a usual situation where you have three generations meeting. It's artists, but it's also human beings. It's people with questions to life. And somehow the excuse of art gives the very unusual situation something which I took away from, which really moved me.
My name is Kate Dyson, and I'm here as one of the visiting artists, which means literally I am an artist's model. And we are led to different positions to do different things on stage. So it's not too scary, even though we only have a very short rehearsal period, because they hold our hands.
What inspired you to get involved?
Well, I did a workshop before Christmas last year, which I thought was absolutely fascinating, because the bits that you're not in, you can actually see there's a lot of stuff looking through mirrors and frames, framing different scenes. And I have to say, it looks absolutely extraordinary. It's really beautiful. It's a very interesting project, and I think lovely to do as well.
And what have your thoughts been then about working in that kind of cross-generational way? Has it made you think more maybe about your own ageing, your own self-image?
No, I think I've got used to that. I'm one of the older ones, but that's okay. I've got a past. And it actually is very interesting. It's in no way threatening or anything. It's absolutely fine.
What do you take away from being part of this?
I think it's something totally different to anything else I've ever done, because you're not creating a character. So you are improvising, although you're being led all the time. It's just it's a fascinating process, because it's not really quite like anything else. It's not like a normal structured piece with a rehearsal period and then performances. And I think it will inevitably be slightly different at every performance.
I also think we are working a lot with this kind of triangle and the power relationship and the struggle between the kind of artist, artwork and viewer, and how these three sort of make the art together. So of course, the viewer, like the audience, the spectator, also has a kind of role in this. Without the viewer, there's no point in us kind of exhibition ourselves.
Well, that was three of the participants in Gob Squad's creation, Pictures for Dorian, and that runs at the Attenborough Centre for the Creative Arts up at Falmer from tomorrow, Wednesday, through to Saturday. Sounds fascinating. I mean, I popped up there today and they had the performers that they brought in from Brighton and Hove. So three young performers, three older performers, and the Gob Squad people kind of sandwiched in the middle, in their middle age. And they have 2 days to rehearse all of this and put it all together.
Well, they were saying it's not really a rehearsal. I mean, it sounds like a very intriguing piece and, worth popping to ACCA.
It looks great, actually. Have a look at Gob Squad's website because they've done some really interesting things and people I know have seen their stuff before, which I actually haven't. They've been raving about it.
How many nights is that on for?
It's only, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Four nights. Don't ask me to do instant maths on my fingers.
Through till Saturday. Yeah. Okay, yeah, so chance to catch that.
So Gob Squad at the Attenborough Centre. And also, I know a lot of people still haven't been to the Attenborough Centre, so go up there because it's great.
I've been there the once, I have to admit, and actually was like, oh, actually, it's really easy to get here. Oh, you can park really nearby. Oh, it's very handy.
You get the train, go by bike.
Get the train to Falmer. You can cycle, or you could drive and park up right near. Or you could walk. There you go.
So, Attenborough Centre, go to it. It's a fantastic venue. You listen to Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM. This is the Brighton Festival Show with Melita Dennett and Rebecca Sandlers. I thought, after that discussion, really, about sort of, you know, Dorian Gray and age and youth, from Brighton, this is Loom and the track is Skin.
Oh, that's the rather lovely Loom. Chilled. With Skin. Yeah, that's if that was the kind of impression you were left with if you saw the picture in my attic, I would be happy. And I'm going nowhere near Melita's attic.
No, don't. Step away from the attic.
Yeah. Step away from the attic. Step towards the dome on Thursday. We've got.
I saw what you did there.
Yeah, that's not thrown together this show, you know. Maybe. Anyway, Les Amazons d'Afrique are a West African all-female supergroup formed out of the fight against violence towards women, and they're at the Dome on Thursday. Let's let Radio Reverb's Mark Johnson from Slipstream be your guide to what to expect from the evening.
So appearing at the Brighton Dome on Thursday, the 24th of May at 7:30, we have Les Amazons d'Afrique. An all-female collective, they are a who's who of female musicians from Mali and beyond, featuring Angelique Kidjo, Candia Kouyaté, Mamane Keita, Mariam Doumier from Amadou and Mariam fame, Mariam Kone, Nyeka, and Rokia Kone. It's a collective of musicians and are subject to other commitments. The band does vary in format and lineup, but you won't be disappointed. It's a fantastic mix of funk, blues, dub, elements of reggae and afrobeat. and profits from the sale of their album, which is out on Real World Records, Republic Amazon, will be donated to the Panzai Foundation, led by Dr. Mukwege in Bukavu in the Democratic Republic of Congo. The project is providing healing support for more than 80,000 women, nearly 50,000 of whom are survivors of sexualized violence. And Les Amazons des Afriques have started a crowdfunding campaign to help finance the work of the Panzai Foundation. And we'll just hear a little bit from them right now.
Les Amazons d'Afrique, it is a project of Valérie Malouf. She has been through the project Les Ambassadeurs. That was men, only men, 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 men. And then she said, maybe, why not a project for women?
We need that all the world listen this. We are sick of seeing women suffer because of violence.
Yeah.
In the family,
the war zones.
In the war zones, every part, we want this. Pratique.
Yeah, we say
stop.
No to the violence.
So, that is Les Amazons d'Afrique playing at the Brighton Dome on the 24th of May. Get yourself down there. It's going to be a great, great night. And don't forget, take your dancing shoes.
Whispering Mark Johnson there from Slipstream. And that sounds like a fantastic show, actually, Les Amazons d'Afrique, taking place at the Dome this coming Thursday. And you can also hear Mark Johnson live in his full glory at 1 o'clock every Saturday here on Radio Reverb.
The Brighton Festival 2018. The sound of your city.
Now, when I first picked up the Brighton Festival programme this year, something sort of jumped out at me, and it was a show called The String Quartet's Guide to Sex and Anxiety.
It's a title, dear, isn't it?
Well, String Quartets giving
like
a guide
quartets.
To sex,
yes.
Just struck me as rather strange.
Yes.
And what did you make of that?
It certainly jumped out at me, being a fan of string quartets, not necessarily a fan of sex and anxiety, but it did sound intriguing.
Now, it's not just the quartet playing the music. So there's actors, there's texts, and it's directed by a guy described as one of Europe's most exciting theatre makers, Calixto Baito. And it looks pretty intriguing.
Yeah, music by Ligeti and Beethoven. And, yeah, spoken word and music to explore, I suppose, contemporary anxieties.
And if that wasn't enough to persuade you to think that it was slightly interesting, and what is this show all about, there are, as I said, some actors. There's a quartet of actors. The String Quartet is the Heath Quartet, in themselves a renowned quartet. And they play, and they're quartetting. They're quartetting.
That's a technical term, yeah. Thanks for that, Rebecca.
They're twanging of the strings. Is that the technical term?
No. Let's move on from what they're doing. They're a string quartet. They're playing.
Their music is intertwined with the actors and the spoken word. And amongst the actors is Kathy Tyson, who I've always thought was fabulous since I first saw her in 1986 Mona Lisa. I can't believe it was that long ago. It's like yesterday. Anyway, the amazing Kathy Tyson. I think have we got a little bit of Kathy Tyson from the show?
We have indeed. Let's find out what she's got to say about it. This is a reading from The Anatomy of Melancholy by Robert Burton, which is part of the String Quartet's Guide to Sex and Anxiety.
Methinks I hear, methinks I see, sweet music, wondrous melody. Towns, palaces, and cities fine. Here now, then there. The world is mine. Rare beauties, gallant ladies shine. Whate'er is lovely or divine, all other joys to this are folly. None so sweet as melancholy. Methinks I hear, methinks I see, ghosts, goblins, fiends. My fantasy presents 1,000 ugly shapes. Headless bears, vile men, and apes. Doleful outcries and fearful sights. My sad and dismal soul affrights. All my griefs to this are jolly. None so damned as melancholy.
Whoa. That was quite powerful, wasn't it?
That gave me a bit of a shiver, actually.
Really lovely. The music and the words, fantastic. That was Kathy Tyson reading from The Anatomy of Melancholy by Robert Burton. And you can see Kathy along with other actors and the Heath Quartet tomorrow, Wednesday and Thursday at the Theatre Royal at 7:30 in The String Quartet's Guide to Sex and Anxiety.
And we will be having Kathy live in the studio with us tomorrow at 5. So if you're listening to
the
live
show...
Can you
say that again?
We will be having Kathy live in the studio with us.
Kathy Tyson.
Kathy Tyson on Radio Reverb.
Amazing.
Rebecca's getting all excited. I have to admit, I'm a bit excited as well. Yes, so you are listening to the Brighton Festival show on Radio Reverb. We do this kind of thing every day during the Brighton Festival at this time, running through until the end of the week, bringing you the lowdown on what's happening in the Brighton Festival. And a quick reminder as well that if you are looking at an event and it looks like it's sold out, do always check online for returns. Quite often it's worth rocking up at the box office as well, because people do return tickets on the night of events, and also on Twitter at Brightfest. So the Brighton Festival website, just a reminder of that, brightonfestival.org.
I think there's pretty good availability across stuff coming up in the next few days, though, with the exception maybe of Shakespeare, because it seems everyone loves a bit of Shakespeare.
They do at Brighton Open Air Theatre as well.
The Tempest at the Brighton Open Air Theatre. I think there are some tickets still, but it's pretty fully booked on a couple of the, so it might be returns only at those.
Yeah, and classical music, of course, is always a big part of the Brighton Festival. There have been lunchtime concerts, events at Glyndebourne, and some more intimate classical performances. There were two big hitters this year. Benjamin Britten's War Requiem has been and gone, but William Walton's Belshazzar's Feast closes the festival this Sunday at the Dome. So I went to the Dome to meet Jill Kay, who programmes the festival's classical music strand.
Hello, I'm Jill Kay. I'm the classical music producer for the Brighton Festival. So it's a big year, particularly this year. Our own Brighton Festival chorus is having a 50th anniversary. The chorus was formed in 1968 to sing Belshazzar's Feast, an amazing piece by William Walton, with the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra in the festival that year. So we decided to try and recreate that as much as we can this year. So we've got the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra coming back. The chorus will sing Belshazzar's Feast in the closing concert, along with Britten's Four Sea Interludes, very beautiful music, and The Lark Ascending by Vaughan Williams, which is a really heart-rending piece. Belshazzar's Feast in the second half has got very nearly 300 musicians in it. It's got everything in the percussion section, including the kitchen sink. There'll be over 150 people singing in the chorus. It's got two brass bands that are going to be sited up in the circle that add add to all this mayhem going on stage at various points. So you'll get this kind of surround sound Dolby system going on. So it was going to be a really exciting and amazing end to the Brighton Festival.
Dare I ask, did anyone who performed in that piece 50 years ago, are they going to be here or maybe in the audience?
There are, I think, three members of Brighton Festival Chorus who are still in the chorus, who joined in 68 and are still in the chorus. They joined as kids, of course, and they're still going. So there will be three people singing. And there are a couple, actually more than a couple, there'll probably be about at least a dozen who sang, who are no longer singing in the choir, but are going to be in the audience. Yeah, it's going to be quite a moment for Brighton Festival Chorus. Very exciting.
That's going to be a banger. Jill Kay programmes this the festival's classical music strand, talking about William Wharton's Belshazzar's Feast that closes the festival this coming Sunday, 7:30 at the Dome. I'm really looking forward to that one. It's going to be massive.
It sounds good. I'll tell you what, obviously once you join the chorus, you don't leave the chorus.
It sounds like it, doesn't it? I really like the idea that people who were there 50 years ago singing are going to come back and watch it again. That's really sweet. I like that. And also there's Lark Ascending, which is a really gorgeous, gorgeous piece of music. So it's going to be a real feast for classical music fans, that one on Sunday. I'm going to be talking in a few minutes' time to Neil Bartlett about his very, very dark tragedy, Medea, which is coming to the Theatre Royal. Before that, a little bit more bright music. This is Jung and 3 AM.
We met at the club at 3 AM.
Rather melancholy, isn't it? Music from Brighton, that is Jung, and the track is 3 AM. You listen to the Brighton Festival programme with Melita Dennett and Rebecca Sandals, and writer and performer Neil Bartlett is bringing a dramatic show to the Brighton Festival on Saturday. Medea, written in rage, takes the Greek legend written by Euripides of a sorceress who commits the ultimate taboo in a monologue by French performer François Testori. I spoke to Neil Bartlett on the phone to hear more about this dark and disturbing piece.
Till death do us part, Jason. Jason, till death you're mine. Jason.
This is a story by Euripides, translated into French, then by you into English. What has it gained in translation?
It's a brand new French play by a brilliant young French playwright, Jean-René Lemoine. He's gone back to all the original classical tellings of the stories, especially Euripides' telling of the Medea legend. So, first of all, it is filtered through the imagination of a young Frenchman. And so the story of Medea is very much a story of being an exile, being a foreigner, being a migrant. She spends her whole life on the run. So that really comes out of the ancient story into the modern world in Jean-René Lemoine's hands. Then his French got turned into English by me as faithfully as my skills as translator could devise. And then it has been translated again, if you like, into this incredible performance by François Testori, who not only uses the words, but uses his remarkable and beautiful body in all sorts of extraordinary ways to create not only Medea, but also all of the other characters in the story.
It looks like performer François Testori really takes the audience into the heart of darkness with this story.
It is a famously dark story. It deals not only with losing your home and being forced to flee across a land where everyone hates you because you're the wrong colour. It also tells the story of being abandoned and hideously mistreated by the man that you love. Hands up, we've all been there. And then right in the heart of the story is the most famous thing that Medea ever did, which is she murdered her own children. Her rage against the world becomes so towering that she commits probably the most famous crime of the classical world. And that moment is very extraordinary in the performance. It's like one of those dreams when you dive down and you get that feeling that you're never going to come up again. It is a pretty extraordinary moment.
How many nights did I sleep? Who cares? In the darkness, I tell my father I'm leaving with him.
With who?
With Jason. My father slaps me. He says,
why do you hate me so much, Medea? What have I ever done to you?
Obviously, Medea being played by a man, does it tell us something else about gender as well?
There's been a lot of discussion about that as because we've toured the show around the country, and the kind of Brighton is the grand finale in a way for us. A lot of discussion of that. I mean, both Francois and I are now close to 60. And so for us, we've been dealing with issues of working as queer and gender fluid artists all our lives. So the contemporary discussion about, oh, wow, what's the gender implications of a man playing a woman? I mean, I'm not on stage so often these days. I first played a woman on stage in 1981, and Francois has been doing it all his life. I think it gives all sorts of different dimensions. I mean, it's very much, Francois's body is very much a queer body, inhabiting the story of this legendary woman. And so you sense that Medea's otherness is the otherness of being female in a patriarchal world, but it's also the otherness of being queer in a straight world. It's also, Francois is foreign himself. He's French, and a particular kind of French. He comes from the deep country in the south of France. And in France, he is other because of that almost peasant background that his part of the world has. So there are all kinds of physical difference at play. The great thing about Francois, who was trained by Béja and then performed with Lindsay Kemp for 2 decades, he has a body that can be any gender it wants. I mean, you watch him change from a man to a woman to a monster to a child just in front of you. So, yeah, from that point of view, I think it's fascinating. When people often talk about, we could move beyond gender, and I think many of us go, yeah, what does that actually look like? What does that feel like? What's it like to say a body can be many things? Well, Francois's body, when he's up there in this extraordinary, half undressed, half wearing one of the biggest frocks I've ever put on stage, and you watch him kind of taking gender for a ride, that's how I describe it, and a pretty fierce ride.
Nice. It looks amazing. And you've mentioned the frocks there. Tell me about the costumes, because they play a large part in it.
They do. Well, costume, it's in one outfit. And Francois is friends of an extraordinary frock maker called Mr. Pearl, who some people will know because he's one of the world's great corset makers. He made the costumes, designed and made some of the costumes for Kylie Minogue's Showgirl tour, if that rings any bells, certainly did with me. I would say if Balenciaga met the Kabuki and lost is how I would describe the gown. It's fantastic. It's fantastic.
Now, this has already been performed at the Marlborough, and of course it's going to be on stage at the Theatre Royal. How different is it doing it on a tiny stage compared to doing it on a massive stage?
On a massive stage. Well, I can't wait to find out. How fantastic. We began our journey. The very first performance was in the Marlborough, where actually the biggest problem was the dress only just fitted on the stage in the Marlborough. It basically took up the entire stage. And now we're on the marvellous, marvellous stage of the Theatre Royal, which I love. I think one of the things about solo performance, because it's a one-man show, I mean, he's sharing the stage with a brilliant musician who plays the live score of the piece. But a solo performer can be as big as the room requires. So in the Marlborough, it was unbelievably intense because if he moved his arm too fast, the sweat would hit someone in
sure,
the audience.
Yeah.
But I think the performance will expand to fill the Theatre Royal. I mean, he has the physical command and also he has this incredible voice. There's also singing in the show. You know, he sings part of Tosca in the original key. I mean, he's one of those performers who's got it all going for him. So I have no worries that he's going to fill the stage with Medea's energy. There's something about seeing a really good solo performer on a big empty stage that can be really exciting.
That sounds absolutely remarkable. That's Neil Bartlett talking about Medea, written in Rage, performed by Francois Testori. You can see that one night only. It's on Saturday at the Theatre Royal.
There are some real treats coming up in the last few days of the festival, aren't
there? There are.
His discussion of the dress took me back to my own days of on the stage.
Were you a
Melita.
Thespian, dear?
I was a thespian. No, I used to. Nothing's changed, no. And I played Clytemnestra in a school play once, and I had a lovely long red flowing dress. Not the nicest of characters, Clytemnestra, but and I
don't think any Greek characters are they?
Well, I mean, they had a tough time, didn't they?
Yeah.
But I had to have gold hair was the idea, and in order to have gold hair, and it had to look sort of severe on Clytemnestra, and I sprayed it with car spray.
What?
Because there wasn't as much hair colouring around back in
those
days.
What did your mum say?
Well, not a lot. You know what my mum's like.
Oh, that's true,
she came in here and you described her as recalcitrant for refusing to talk to you.
Yes. Okay, well, there we go. That's Rebecca's thespian story. Quite a few things coming up in the festival. We can squeeze in a few mentions before the end of the programme. We are going tonight to see Elephant and Castle at the Brighthelm Centre, Tuesday and Wednesday. And it's about talking in your sleep.
I think it looks fascinating. And I just pointed out to you the small print, or quite large print, that it's actually a musical about talking in your sleep. Now, I love a musical. Melita, I'm not sure.
We'll see. We'll see. I'll be interviewing them, so we'll hear about that on tomorrow's show. We'll be talking about that.
Do you
on
talk in your
show.
Sleep?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I might start just so I can do a show about it. Also, Oscar Bright's Lose Your Head Film Festival for people with learning disabilities. All the films made by people with learning disabilities. Talking about that on the show yesterday. Catch that on the podcast. That is tomorrow, Wednesday, at Dukes at Comedia. String Quartet's Guide to Sex and Anxiety. We are going to be talking about tomorrow. David Shrigley is going to be talking at the Dome on Wednesday. He will contain, or it will contain, numerous rambling anecdotes, but will not be in the slightest bit boring. It says here.
Yeah, and he has signed a written agreement to this in his own blood. So Shrigley has promised in his own blood that it will be a fascinating night at the Dome on Wednesday. That's at 8 p.m. Brighton Dome Wednesday.
And Creation Pictures for Dorian, which we've already talked about earlier on the programme, runs from Wednesday through to Saturday. And tomorrow I'm going to be meeting the Tango Mortan crew. So we'll be hearing them on tomorrow evening's show. They are on tomorrow night, Wednesday, at All Saints in Hove. Brightonfestival.org is the place to go, or pick up your shiny yellow festival programme, or on Twitter at Brightfest.
Wow, so there really is a lot to do in the last few days of festival. So Melita's woe at the end of festival, at the start of the programme, has...
It's gone, it's evaporated.
It's excitement at what's still to come.
Yes.
You have been listening to the Brighton Festival special show with Melita Dennett and Rebecca Sandals here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, DAB and online. Monday to Friday, 5 to 6pm during the festival, and we repeat at 10pm and 9am the next day.
Speak for yourself, Deb. Thank you for today's guests, Bastian Birgit and Kate from Gob Squad, Neil Bartlett, David Shrigley, Jill Kay and reporter Mark Johnson. Well, we're going to see you again at the same time tomorrow. We're going to play out with Les Amazons d'Afrique and I Play Cora from Melita and Rebecca. Toodle pip.
Bye.